This is Tuck Max Reel. This is Tuck Max Reel. This is Channel One Right, the beginning of Tuck Max Reel. This is Channel One Right, the beginning of Tuck Max Reel. This is Channel One Right, the beginning of Tuck Max Reel. This is the beginning of Tuck Max Reel, Channel One Right. Channel One Right, the beginning of Tuck Max Reel. And this is Channel One Right, the Channel One Right. I'm transcribing the cassette tape we made on Thursday, right after lunch, on the 19th of March, 1970. Thursday, the 19th of March, 1970. Now, that's the first one. We sat on the front porch. We sat on the front porch and talked. Tuck and Ms. Mack and Danny and I, just us. Just us, on Thursday afternoon. Oh, that was late. That was late, between 4 and 5 o'clock is when I got there, around 4 o'clock.
You got a right smart, sizable plantation out here, haven't you?
No, sir, we hadn't got so much. See, I'm caretaker for a company in Ocala. They've got a large tract of land up here.
They got a right smart land out here?
Yeah, 4,500 acres. Now, wait a minute, they sold some of it, but I don't know just exactly how much.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be sort of hard to get over, wouldn't it?
Yes, right now, you'd have to take a boat to get over some of it. See, it's situated between two lakes. In between is mostly dense hammocks. Sister-in-law's sister and her husband came down here years back. Now they had one of these recorders.
You got low ground? Some of it low?
Some of it's what we call overflooded. Stands underwater at times.
Yeah. Right smart of it is low and got water over it.
Yeah. And this, well, on the east end, there's quite a bit of highland, pine flat woods, I reckon you'd call it. Mm-hmm. And now our place, we have these 41 and 141 and 41, 181 and 37 acres in our little place here.
How are you figuring?
200 and some acres.
Mm-hmm.
But that's in, that's separate from the company's land.
Mm-hmm.
We have some flat land and some hammock land and some of it borders on the lake.
Lake Leaving?
Lake Ledworth.
Ledworth, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now that it's got water on it, is that where the ducks come?
Yeah, that's where the ducks. It's a prairie lake.
Yeah.
Some people call it just a prairie, but we've always, all the old timers and way before me always called it Ledworth Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Levy Lake's the same way. It's a prairie lake.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to begin with, it's a chain of lakes. It starts off way south of here, what they call Moore's Bay. And Moore's Bay empties into Moore's Pond. And then there's another where it gets a lot of water from. It's out southeast of here, what we call Giga Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And Giga Lake comes down and fills up and runs through Kidder Swamp. Kidder Swamp empties into what they call the Feast of Pond. Then comes on down to Moore's Pond. Moore's Pond empties into Levy. And Levy empties into Canapahaw. And Canapahaw has a tremendous suck hole. And sometimes when it closes up, there's a big body of water over there,
mm-hmm.
say 500 acres. And then when that suck hole breaks loose, and we'll just a rough guess, 6 weeks, all the surplus water is gone and goes underneath the ground.
Now that's in Levy? That's Ledworth.
No, Ledworth empties into Levy.
Which one got Suck Hole?
Canapahoe.
Mm. Yes. And well, now, they say that same thing about...
Kings Prairie.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Lord. Now, I've never seen this one because I never was around much.
But you just talk any time you want to.
This place over there on Payne's Prairie, it's just a river comes in there during high water. Well, let's go back to that. Now, I don't know any further back than Newman's Lake. Newman Lake empties into Prairie Creek down in Payne's Prairie. Down Prairie Creek. Then Mr. Kemp, he cut a canal across one portion of it, Payne's Prairie, and it drifts into, it flows into River Sty. We always call it River Styx, but they got a fancy way of spelling it.
Oh, I see.
And then it, River Sty empties into Orange Lake, and Orange into Little Orange. And then, back up a little bit, Lock Loose empties into Orange also. And then it goes on to the Orange Spring, goes down Orange Spring to Ocklawaha River, and from Ocklawaha River to St. George, and from St. George on out to the Gulf,
yeah,
to the Atlantic Ocean.
Now, did they used to have a barge to go along there?
This is way before my time,
yeah.
But they said they used to have small steamboats on Payne's Prairie.
Uh-huh.
And they hauled oranges and whatnot free, I reckon.
Well, you know, up there on Alto, they've got those canals.
Yeah.
Now, they go way back, I think.
Yeah.
And they used to haul a lot of stuff in there.
There was some.
My understanding.
There was somebody, if I'm not mistaken, had a picture of the little steamboats. Now, you can't imagine a little steamboat running on, of course, before they took all that water off. It was a big sheet of almost clear water. There were islands, floating islands, and I reckon as Hyson's as it's always been since I can remember. And I think the majority of that is owned by Camps of Ocala.
That sort of spoils you if you have all that country to range over, wouldn't it?
Oh, no.
And look around for the ducks and fishing and wildlife.
Yeah. way back, I'll say 50 years ago, there were hardly any hunters in here except the old farmers.
Yes.
And they didn't have to get out in the lake. They could slip around the edges and get them a mess of ducks and go on home. And when I first came up here, there was only two what we call wing shooters that I can remember. And that was Dr. Lucius Montgomery and Bob Watkins. I reckon you've heard of the old Montgomerys that used to be here in Micanopy.
Yeah, Micanopy, yeah.
And there's the Senate lives on 441, just, you know where George Pond is, right across from Warburg.
Yes.
His name is H.L. Montgomery. He's a descendant from Dr. Montgomery, and then Dr. Montgomery's old daddy. I don't remember much about him because that was before I got around in here. But now that Warburg, it does have a drainage too. It drains into Payne's Prairie.
I didn't know about that.
It's a spring-fed lake.
Yes.
And it's deep as a dick.
It's deep up there.
Yes.
It's the only one I know that's actually, you know, a lake.
Yeah.
Seems like a lake.
Well, that's what, that would be my idea of a lake. It's a clear body of water.
Now, we don't have that much up this far. They have that down towards Lake County,
yeah, Orange County, and all down in that pretty near lake you see is a clear lake, sand bottom.
they wouldn't, when the farmers, just people living out here, go out there and shoot a few ducks, the ducks last longer, don't they?
Yeah, sure. And old farmer would hardly, unless he got real lucky, he don't hardly ever kill over 6 or 8 ducks, maybe, and he'd go on home and, well, it didn't have any refrigeration or anything, and he had to use them up pretty quick. Now, not so much now, but I can think back maybe 30 years ago, we'd go out there and 10 was the limit back then, but we didn't stop at the limit. We'd shoot to it, and you could bring them in and clean them and freeze them and have them practically the year through.
You know, they've got a blind over there back of me on little old Fish Prairie.
Yeah.
Oh, when the hunting season opens, early of the morning, it sounds like the artillery over there.
Well, you should be out here sometime now. If the wind isn't just right, you can't hear coming from the lake, but if the wind's blowing out of northwest or something, you can hear every shot that's fired down, and there's a lot of them. I don't reckon there's quite as much hunting now as there was years back, but there's not as many ducks. And there's people that got part of the lake that they don't want anybody hunting on, just their friends, neighbors. And well, the company's got guessing a third of it. And that's where we get to hunt. Mm-hmm. Well, I can go on the other side, but it's so much more convenient just to go here. The lake is only a half a mile right straight back here from the house.
Oh, is it?
But you can't, we don't get in there. We have to go on up what we call Bar's Hammock. We got a landing up there.
Oh, that's it. Now, you see on Fish Prairie back there, this, the Richardson brothers own some of it. Ben Franklin owns some of it.
Yeah.
I just back up on it. I don't own any of it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm right there. I could go out there if I want to, but I don't. And that's the same way over here.
Yeah.
You've got...
It's going to come more and more like that, too, because if you don't own a little place or something to hunt on, you have to go beg somebody or pay them to go in.
When you talking about seeing, they didn't pay no attention to that. They just didn't bother about the fences, did they?
That's right. Well, back in those days, there were hardly any fences, only the little places at the farmer's farm. That was before we had the no fence law. And I always thought when you said no fence law, you didn't have to have any fences at all. Yeah. But that means you got to have more fences and better fences.
Yeah.
Because if you farm, you'd be foolish to go out there and plant a crop.
Yeah.
Well, it's a law. Nobody's supposed to have any stock running at large. But you can't tell. Say my neighbor down there had 50 head of cattle. I planted 25 acres of corn. And a tree, wind blew a tree down on his fence in the night. Well, they could come out, wouldn't be his fault in a way, because he didn't know anything about it. They could come over and ruin my crop.
It wouldn't take long.
It wouldn't take long, no, sir.
Well, now, up the country there where I live, before I left up there, well, that's been a good while. We put up boundary fences on that place. And you know what? We hadn't had them up any time, but what, we just took them down again. They just weren't in need for them anymore. Well, they raised soybeans and corn, and all animals could get it there, do some damage in there.
Yes, sir.
But they don't. They don't keep the boundary fences up.
Well, how do they keep the stock off?
They just don't.
They keep the stock confined?
I guess so.
Right.
Just keep the stock.
That's more or less out of here.
Was
all the people that's got stock has got them in a fence pasture.
Mm-hmm.
And now, there's one side of this property up here that we use a water fence on. Use the water as a fence. And unless the lakes go practically dry, we don't have any trouble. Sheriff Ramsey, He's got a place over there, and he does the same thing. Well, this camp that owns Payne's Prairie, he sold a big portion. Well, I say a big portion. He sold two sections of land to this Whitehurst over here, Vivian Whitehurst. He's a big road contractor and cattle raiser. And in fact, he's got his thing and everything. And he's got some, what would you call them, Dan? Dig ditches with them anyway.
Drag lines.
And one of the young ones came over here to see me about a little piece of property back over here. And he said they'd had 27 miles of digging. That's all around and and then across ditches, maybe lateral, I reckon you'd call them. But he said it would take them 3 years to complete it. And they're going to drain it. They claim they're going to drain it. And I reckon it's possible. And make a cow pasture out of it. And Levy Lake is... Now, I'm not positive about this, but they say it's 3 by 6 miles. Big. That's a pretty good body of water.
Yeah.
And our Lettuce Lake here is just 1.5 by 3.
Mm-hmm.
And since I've been up in here, it's going bone dry. This deep holes around the edges. Well, there's one out in the center. But I was saying it's so dry the mud would crack open. You could stick your foot in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, it's always been a mystery to me. You know all the fish supposedly die. And it'd fill up. And in 2 or 3 years time, you can catch 5 and 6 pound bass out there.
Yeah.
Well, they don't grow that fast. They've got to come from somewhere but where.
Oh.
There's no underground stream that I could realize. If they had an underground stream, if they were smart enough, they could come up there. And there's only one time that I can remember that they restocked that lake. About 7 years ago, I guess it was, they restocked and put brim and bass in there. There's no speck of perch in there to speak of.
Well, now that's pretty good now.
Well,
he just rains them in there.
Well, I heard it said that these old pond birds, cranes,
yeah,
they would go to some place where a fish is bedding shallow, and they would get in that bed, and a few of the eggs would stick to the feet.
Yeah.
They'd fly out to another pond, and maybe the eggs would fall off, and that's believable, but whether it's right or not, I don't know.
Yeah, you'd have to watch them, see
yeah.
it down, or you'd know for sure. I know it looks like that's a mighty fine thing to have all that water. It'd keep it there.
That's
somehow.
Right. Well, there's no certainty of it.
Yeah.
Now I farmed up there in this hammock, right on the margin of the lake, for several years. And I noticed when you got plenty of water in the lake, your crop don't suffer near as bad as when the lake's dry.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, well, wherever the level of the lake water is, that's where the level of your land is. That's where the water level of your land is.
That's right. Yeah. And all them roots go right down to that water.
Yeah. Supposedly, and then a leaf plant, it gets a lot of it from dew and fog, and when it rains, they absorb a certain amount of it. Yeah. Here's another funny thing. Now, our lakes fill up in the summertime, or in the fall, when the trees are dormant. And it doesn't go down near as fast. But you take in the springtime, if you don't have a lot of rain, it'll go down so fast it's hard to imagine. The trees take up a lot of water. Then
yeah.
The wind and the sunlight.
Those old hyacinths, those tussocks,
yeah.
they they all, when they start growing.
That takes up a lot of water. And there's grass and bonnets and there's a lot of weeds and what we call coontail moss. They have to have a lot of water to survive and grow.
Yes, sir. So unless you have a sort of a wet season.
That's right.
They get ahead of it.
And not only in the lake, but in the fields too.
Yeah.
When you plant a crop, you've got to be there pretty regular to keep them down until your crop gets a good start.
You know, I keep thinking that I'll get caught up and I can go down there on that little swamp there on my place. It's just 3 or 4 acres, except, you know, when the water's there, then it makes it maybe 8 or 10. And rig up something to get rid of all that vegetation, the little tussocks and the
mm-hmm.
ice and all like that. Actually, I don't think it'd be so hard. Dan, you know these little elevators like you use for the hay?
Yes.
And one thing or another. You just stick one of those down in there, and then you get out in the water, let it come on up there on the ground, or you can empty it in a trailer or something. And you don't have to go out there and get that vegetation. You see, when the wind changes, it'll bring it over there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to pick it up, it's too heavy.
That's
right. But if you've got it rigged there where it'll take a hold of it and sort of pull it out.
Run it out on the hill and let the water run out of it. It's not near so heavy.
Not near so heavy.
Now, I saw a picture in the paper last week. They were trying to clear a place of height, and they had a crane there with a big forklift on it. And people in airboats would go out and drift this stuff close enough to the edge where they could pick it. God, they'd pick up probably a 6 or 8 foot. When they dipped down, they'd get that mud, swing it around and put it out on the hill. And I believe eventually they'll find something to get rid of those heights. But Lord, it'll take a lot of doing.
Take a lot of doing.
They grow overnight, you know. They just you can see a little old patch today and go back at 2 weeks, and it's a big patch then. They just spread overnight.
And they'll dry out and look like they just gone.
Yeah, you throw some up on the hill. A neighbor of mine was down here talking to me this morning. He says you can throw them out there and step on them, and if they're dry, they'll crack. And then let a little rain up, let them get enough moisture, and God, they put up and start growing back again.
Now, they haven't been in this country too long.
And the best I can remember, and the first hyacinths I was seeing was on Orange Lake.
Yeah.
And there were very, very few then.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Warburg got any in it, it's very few, I think. And maybe they don't thrive as good in a clear lake like that as they would in these prairie lakes. Because fish, alligators going in there and they stir up the mud and probably some of it comes to the top and they feed on that, those hyacinths. And I believe they're part air plant too.
Them roots just go forever down there.
Yeah, but they don't, now in deep water, they don't go to the bottom.
Don't they?
No, so, you know, you've heard of hyacinths drifting.
Yeah.
Well, this little old lake right here in McKinnell, there's times out there you go out there to fish, and if you got in the wind at all, you got to watch. Because if they cut you off from the land, and you're just out there.
Yeah.
Now, it's possible that you might go some other place and land. But say where you park your car, I've had it happen. And you can't go back to that land, but you have to go somewhere else and walk around where your car is or something and wait for them to change. And if a large enough body of them get in there, you can't push them out with no boat or anything.
I don't know when I was as tired as I was. We were down there working them hyacinths and trying to rig up something to pull them out.
Mm-hmm.
And when you out there in the water, just sometimes you can walk and sometimes you're hardly a little bit too deep for you. and you pushing them hyacinths around, and I'm telling you, before you know it, you get winded.
That's right. That's
you had enough of that. But old man alive, you don't want to work them by hand.
No, Lord. And you just go there and start pulling out a little trail for your boat to get through. The roots are entangled. And you're not only pulling on what you got in your hand, but you probably got a bunch that big around.
Now, that's they do better on these shallow lakes, don't
they? That's what I think. Because
yeah. That's where the roots go down.
That's right.
But now, the wind still blows them.
Yeah. Yeah.
They never take root.
No, that's what I said a while ago. Their roots don't go to the bottom. They're not attached to the bottom of the lake. And I've seen a big bunch of hyacinths out in deep water and other vegetation, such as, of course, buttonwood bushes, buttonwood trees. They'll come up in that tussock of hyacinths. Well, I know that some of them don't take roots in the ground because they drift from back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I can lay all that to is nature. And when you get talking about nature, you cover a lot of territory, I think.
Yeah. Well, now, them hyacinths is the worst thing you have to deal with. All the rest of it you can sort of control.
Yeah.
The bonnets and all.
Yeah. And then there are some lakes that I know one called the lake, it's just a pond, my way of saying. Buddy Huff, I don't know whether he fertilized them or what, but it just ruined that lake. The bonnets were so thick you couldn't fish in there. And he went and got him some of these old, now which is grows in the water, winky pins or chinky pins? Danny, you know?
Winky pins.
Winky pins. They come up and make a bud, I reckon you'd call it, a bloom, and then the bud comes out and there's seed all in there. And when they get started, you've got something to contend with then. Now these regular water bonnets, I'll call them, they're not a fast spreader. But if you leave those wink pin things there, when that bud gets grown, then it turns over and eventually those seeds drop out, and every seed will make a plant. And in just a short while, you've got your lake covered.
They spray that, and they kill the hyacinths in there, but they sprayed it, I don't know how many times, but the hyacinths would turn brown and look like they were going to die, and then they would start to green up again, and every time they start to green up, they spray them over. But they eventually did kill them out of there.
Yeah.
Well, that's a small place. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's on South Main, going into
yes.
town.
Yeah.
That was completely covered with hyacinths, just like you were talking about in the prairie.
Mm-hmm.
And they continually sprayed them until they did kill them out of there.
I know you know it's done with the telephone and light line. They go along there with the spray and some bushes probably that big.
Yeah.
They'll kill them. They just killed them dead down to the ground. But next year you got to do the same thing over again. They just sprout right back up.
Yeah.
My son and I experimented. We got us a little old spray. And it had a drum sitting up on the front end of a big boat. We was going to poison this coontail, because it was in our favorite fishing hole, and we spent a good bit of time up there. I think what they claim, it fertilized them, and it grew so fast till it grew out, you know, and died. But gosh, it seemed like it helped it well. We put it out there. It never did do anything. Now, you can take dynamite, which would be awful expensive, but you can string out a long string of dynamite and set it off. And it'll clear out flags and that moss. I don't know about in real deep water, but where your water not over 3 or 4 feet deep, it'll just blow you out of channel good in there.
It does.
And it takes years to come back.
Well, now, how would you do that? Just get your channel through there?
Yeah. And you see, you can, you know, you've heard of Joe Hare, the well digger up here. But right at my boat landing up there, I had a little difficult there. up next to the edge, you had room enough to turn the boat around, and it's shallow. And the hyacinths and stuff had grown up there. So he brought some old dynamite out here and tried to blow it out, but his dynamite, he said, was too old and didn't but one. Three or four sticks of it grow. But right out, I had a little old dock up there, and I made a mistake when I built it for low water so we could get out far enough to the boat. And when the lake comes up, it's 2 or 3 feet under the water. But right at the end of that, I got a nice clear hole now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, now, that's an idea. Yeah.
I don't know what dynamite costs now, but it used to be reasonable. But I expect, like everything else, it's doubled it in price or maybe more.
Well, now, you can't buy it anymore.
I know. You've got to sign a Declaration of Independence. Well, I asked you about him selling me a few sticks.
Uh-huh.
He says, Tuck, I says, I'd rather come out there and do the job for you than to go through all this. He used it down where he hits rocks and drilling wells. He puts a stick or two down there and tears the rock up.
Yeah.
And he's got a pretty good alibi to get it.
Sure.
Now, I know we used to could get it from Ocala. They got a little place way out of town where they keep it, which you had to sign up way back then to get it.
Oh, really?
When we first moved up here in the Hamlet, there was no modern stuff like they got now, and they started cleaning up some of that raw Hamlet land with axes and saws. And the boss, he finally got the idea, got us an auger and some dynamite. We'd bow down in those stumps and set about 2 or 3 charges in there, put a cap in one and set it, and here went your stump.
Yeah.
But nowadays they got these old bulldozers and they just go in there and root them out.
Yeah. But them bulldozers costly.
Oh, my Lord. That my son had this little old fence rope pushed up there, and at $19 an hour.
Yeah.
And we was fortunate. We got a man that was pretty good. He believed in trying to give you money's worth.
Yeah.
And I had some flat land back here, had all the timber cut off of it. And he's got a chopper. What did he say? It weighed 12 tons, wasn't it?
12 tons.
And I carried him out there and we looked at it. And he says, I can fix this thing. Ready for you to plant. And it cost you $40 or $50 an acre. Not well, let's try it. Those choppers stand up about that high. Got blades on them. It's a tandem job.
Yeah.
And he has one blade set up about that much higher than the other one. For what, I don't know. But Lord, ordinary palmettos, the little trees, it just chews them up.
Yeah.
There's a big old caterpillar that pulls it.
Yeah.
And he did a pretty nice job about that. Of course, a great big stump, it'll gnaw on it, but they don't get it up. And
yeah.
Sooner or later, I reckon we'll have to have the stumps out. We were going to plant clover on it. I've got a neighbor over here, Eric Whittington. You may have known him, or heard of him anyway. Well, his old uncle had a big dairy up there in Jacksonville, and they had clover. They had where they could water it up. It got too wet to take the water off of it. And he said it made more cows eat than anything he could think of.
Uh-huh.
And
now, does that come on in late winter?
Oh, you plant it in the winter, and it grows to hot weather. Then it dies back, but it reseeds itself.
Yes.
And I never have. I know we've got what we call old field clover here.
Yeah.
And now, imagine if you take it and just fertilize it, it'd make a whole lot of feed, too.
Well, now, you know, I've seen a few fields with that clover in them, it's lush. About the time there's nothing else, and when the calves, all the cows are springing and all like that, and that's, in my experience, that's when they pull the cows down right along in there.
That's right.
And if you had some of that clover for them, no telling what they'd do.
That's right. I've forgotten them about when we parted, but I think they said they'd run from 4 to 6 in it. Sometimes 8 head of cattle on an acre of that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Sometimes it's just reverses. Some of these grads ain't got to take 6-8 acres for one tap.
Well, and then with all that clover they eat, you see, they wouldn't have to stay in that all the time.
That's right. The good healthy cow, 2 hours, she'd have a bait.
Mm-hmm.
These Smith boys out here, I was over there 1 year, they had a big field of oats and rye.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many cows they had up there. They got a lot of cattle. And they'd run those cows in there early in the morning, let them stay about 2 hours and go in and run them back out. And they said the idea for that was if you let them stay in there, they'd either lay down on it,
mm-hmm.
or tromp, or walk,
mm-hmm.
and they ruin more than they eat. And I think he was right about it.
And then they'll eat more than they need.
Yeah. Yeah.
After they fill up on it, apparently, they can go on out and eat that old dry feed.
Yeah, that's right. They really got a setup over there. He's got a feed mill over there. He makes his own feed. I drove it over there the other afternoon. And he's got, I reckon you'd call them, look like silos. Great big tanks. And he grinds. Well, he was interested. He knew this man was chopping my land,
mm-hmm.
and he came over and wanted to see that. So we rode down there, and we got talking, and he was telling me about it's his nephew got this feed mill. So he said he could mix his feed a cow, I believe he said, not to fatten them, but to keep them alive, keep them going, for 7 cents a day. I told him, I said, well, I sure can't do that. I know part of his mix is cottonseed meal and citrus pulp, and snap corn, and maybe soybean meal, or maybe the whole soybean, I don't know. But I saw him, he's got a shed over there. Great. I'd be scared to see how large it is. But he's got worlds of air corn in there. And there's a nigga there with a dump body truck and a conveyor. He just goes in there and fills that truck up and runs around to a big hopper, pulls it in there and comes out, snap corn. And I don't know whether he regrinds citrus pulp or not, but he makes a mixture of all that. And he's got a machine and backs up and puts probably a ton of feed in it, drives out, and he got all of it grinded out into the feed truck. He had 50, 75 head of feeders over there. And boy, them things were beautiful.
So he don't have all that handling?
That's right. One man does the operating.
And then that machinery is not complicated, see, so he don't have much...
That's right. He starts up a little old engine on that... feed distributor and drives out by the side of that trough and he fills it up or puts as much in as he wants to. When he gets the end of one row of trough, cuts it off, turns it right the other. Now, they had to clean those pins every once in a while, but they've got scrapes and mechanical loaders and dump bodies, and one man can practically do the whole thing. And I don't know, Clarence told me. He said if you had to do it like you used to, take corn and chop it up, or take hay out there, and, well, he grinds hay in with this feed, too. Oh, I meant to mention that. And, well, it takes 6 or 8 men. Now one man does it all.
That just spoils a man, you know.
And another thing. It'll spoil your pocketbook if you got to buy all that machinery, too.
How about that?
But he sells a lot of feed, and I imagine if he can make it that cheap, he makes a pretty big profit on it. And maybe enough profit to take care of his grinding and feed.
Yeah.
Nah. I bought a ton of feed. Johnson, they delivered it, and they had a pretty good nigga on the truck. We was talking, He says they're trying to get away from this delivering. He says they got so much competition and they had to cut it down so low, the profit, he says, they can't make nothing and deliver it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he's about right.
Well, I didn't know they would deliver anymore unless you bought a whole truckload of stuff.
Well, they run a truck to Ocala twice a week from Gainesville. And I've known those Johnson boys for a number of years. They used to be down in Ocala with Seminole people.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and...
Oh, they did.
Old man Jim Taylor, he was a start of this place up here. And he had a fertilizer plant, and an ice plant, and a crate factory. And they put out that Marco brand of fertilizer.
Marico.
Marico, yeah. I don't know why I always say Marco. But he said they had a muck pond. And they dug that muck and used it as a filler.
Oh.
Well, Lord, when these lakes go dry up here, you can get God knows how much of that stuff. About 100 tons, I reckon. All that vegetation dying back and rotting. And he said that they had dug down 30 feet in some of those ponds and were still getting good muck.
And, good Lord.
I told him, you always said about old man Beard up here in Gainesville, he used sand. Said most real estate people sold their land by the acre, by the foot or something. Said he sold his by the pound. Of course, that was just saying.
Yeah.
But the way I understand all these white earth boys, that's the way they got their start. It was through old man Beard.
Is that right?
Yeah. And when I was a kid, 12, 13 years old, my daddy lived down at Kendrick between here and Ocala.
Yeah.
An old man Whitehurst, the daddy of all them boys, was out there living in a little shack like the turpentine people or around a lime kiln put up little shacks for people that he was living in, and he had those four boys and a girl, and he was sharecropping.
Yeah.
Now, if you was to tell one of them that today, he'd look at you kind of hard, I imagine. But that's the truth. Just surviving, he was just a little old tiny fat boy, maybe six, and he's way younger now. And the old man had a job for all of them.
Yeah. Well, they've certainly come out of it, haven't they?
Oh, my Lord, yeah.
Now, who are these Smiths boys you talk about, Mr.?
Well, there's a whole bunch of Smiths back there, two or three different families.
Oh.
But the one I'm talking about, they start off with Cedric and Clarence.
Well, now, old man Cedric died.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, his boy, I know his boy.
Yeah, Cedric. He's a fine boy.
And I know Miss, you know, what's her name?
No.
His mother.
Ruth.
Ruth.
And she was old Cedric Senior.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know who she was before they were married.
Now them two is the only ones I know.
Yeah.
But now they live on this road.
You go this
to Shiloh.
Grade.
Yeah.
Where you can go to Shiloh and
go down.
Blacktop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They live over there.
They've got a wonderful place. And then right across the road, it's the most near.
Well, now, is that the place you're talking about where Cedric is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where he does all that feeding and all.
Yeah. And they used to be big truck farmers.
I didn't know what he did now.
Yeah.
Cedric.
Well, he's a contractor too.
Yeah.
Tobin and what's the other name? It's carpenters down there. You know who I'm talking about.
JB.
They, I think, Cedric gets a contract, and they do the work.
Mm-hmm. And he finances it.
Yeah. They work it somehow. I don't know that exactly how. But Inez was talking, she goes over here to a young lady, she's a beautician, and she gets a lot of gossip from over there.
Oh.
And I think Ruth Smith was over there. And he was talking about people making money, and this fella Hendricks got that drugstore that McIntosh.
Yeah.
Said he's already made his pile and retired. And Ms. Smith says, well, Cedric certainly hadn't made his pile yet. But they've got a lot of land over and a lot of timber and cattle, and he's not a poor man, Bob.
He's not hurting.
No, not hurting a bit.
Well, now, this Hendricks boy?
Yeah.
Now, he's the one who said he'd made his money?
Yeah. That's what Ms. Smith said, Hendricks. You know, Dr. Cook was there before Hendricks.
Yes. Oh, he went into all that real estate there.
Yeah.
So he don't have to sell drugs. He can just collect the rent, can't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, I imagine so, yeah.
Lease all that stuff. But he got an income.
Yeah, sure he has. And I think he's got to be one of these bottle fanatics now, too. He's
yeah,
got these
right.
old bottles and things.
Yeah. Well, now, I'd go down there looking for him. Well, I wouldn't go looking for him. But I'd be down there and I'd say, where's... Doc Hendricks. They say he's in South America.
Yeah.
Or somewhere like that. You know. He came up at my place one time, wanted to buy it.
Yeah.
Now that's the end of the first side of the cassette. And I talked to Ms. Smith, Ms. Mack a minute. I told her that he was talking too fast. And that all I did was just talk along and let him pick up anything he wanted and go ahead with it. We rested a minute. She came on out on the front porch there, and she was sitting in the parlor in the living room. And she said to him that maybe Mr. Miles would like to hear about those horses on the prairie and those old things that he knew, Mr. Miles knew about all these modern thing. He'd heard about that.
Yeah.
That sounds nice.
That's something real old. This modern stuff, he knows about that.
Yeah.
I don't know hardly where to start. But way back, each old farmer would, like I told you a while ago, all this land was open. And each old farmer would put him a mare out.
Yeah.
And maybe they'd go in together and get one stallion or two or three stallion. And they would raise right out there on the prairie.
Yeah.
And they called them wild prairie ponies, but they weren't really wild.
You know, I've heard about that for years, and I never have heard the details of it, you know. I want to hear this.
And once a year, they'd go out there and try to pin them. Whichever one's mare had a colt, well, they would put a brand on him.
Uh-huh.
That's the way they distinguished whose was who.
Yeah.
And then later on, they got money created a growing truck, and they didn't keep up with them so good. And there'd be a mixture when they got them in a pen to tell whose was who, you know, after a colt's weaned. It's hard to tell who his mother is.
Yeah.
But you could get you one, and it never got to be real large horses. 8, 9, once in a while you might get one weigh 1,000 pounds. But when you got one broke,
reach out, man.
You had a horse that was tough. You couldn't hardly kill him in reason.
Yeah.
I remember when we first up in the hammock there, they had two that were broke. No, her daddy raised one of them, but he came from a prairie mare, and it was 5 miles through. We didn't come out this way. We had a road, went straight from the hammock to Mickenover. It's 5 miles. You can go out there and catch one and put the saddle on, and when you swung up on him, he went in a lope.
Yeah.
And unless it was a geese, you loped him all the way to Mickenover. You'd get that day one long breath, and that was all it was to it. And some of them use them for cattle ponies.
Yeah.
Some of them use them to farm with, and it's just an all-around horse. I don't remember exactly how many, but I raised enough more and used than a few to sell.
Yeah.
And I, the last one that, not the last one I raised, but the last one I used, I think we figured he was 27 years old when he died.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good age for a horse to live.
They didn't, what did they, what was this?
Along the coast they call them tackies, marsh tackies.
And Dan's got a little old mare here now, it's got a colt. We got her bred back, we hope, to Appaloosa.
Yeah.
She came from Georgia, what island?
Off Sapelo.
Sapelo Island. Is that the place that R.J. Reynolds?
Yes.
He's got a playhouse out there, and he's also got a, what is it, educational
uh-huh.
something?
That's an extension University of Georgia, Marine Bonds and that.
It's something big. My youngest, his mother worked out there a while.
Well, now, did you handle these horses?
Yeah. I've helped handle them, yeah.
I can tell you about something that happened when he and I were first married. When he and I were first married, we lived up in the house. You don't have that turned on, do you?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I guess I can go ahead and tell it.
Let me tell you. It's pointed.
And one afternoon, he saddled the horse and got me to go with him to ride. And after we got out in the woods a little way, we run into a bunch of wild ponies. And he took after him and told me to follow him. Well, I just stopped my horse and stayed there.
And she had a sister that was, she didn't care if she was riding just as far as I would. Miss Lillian had the music store in Gainesville.
Yes.
And then I had a sister that she did, and my youngest daughter. I would look for them all to get killed, but they never did, luckily.
Yeah.
This wasn't so bad out on the prairie, but you get in a hammock in the rough woods, you know. You had to use a little discretion.
Yeah.
And there was a boy, I don't know exactly where he's from, he said Texas and then Arizona. He came in here with a Wild West show. You know, we used to have a fair each year.
Yeah.
And he came in with a Wild West show. A Mabel Max Wild West show, I believe it was. And we had another boy out there who was supposed, we was getting these little horses and breaking them and selling them. And this boy wasn't no good. He's full flush, so to speak. And he got this other boy, and he was the real stuff.
Yeah.
And we got in there and got to working, and I was just working at part-time because I had a job with a company out there. And he got in touch with another boy over here at Campbell, Carl Stokes. And we'd go out there and run a bunch of those things in the pen and rope us one and snub him up to a post or a tree, put a saddle on him and a neck rein, no bridle, no halter, no nothing. Then we'd draw straws to see who would try to ride him. And if you got thrown and he didn't hurt you, well, you'd try him again.
Yeah.
But if you figured it too much for us, one other boy would take him, we'd keep on, we'd rode him.
Yeah.
And they were tough, little old things. They were large enough, but it didn't look like to care a good size man. Well, I didn't weigh, I weighed about 30 pounds less than I do now.
Uh-huh.
And they were really tough.
Well, now, they was out running loose.
They never got a grain of corn.
Yes.
And
never got handled.
No. They were just out there raising, you might say, wow.
Yes.
Then some of them started getting better stock, better stallions, and breeding them up.
Oh.
And, but I don't think that built-up stuff was near as tough as old, just the ones that raised out there by themselves.
Well, now, you've been riding out. What do you go out in now?
I go out in a Jeep because the doctor won't let me ride horseback anymore.
But you haven't been doing that long.
No.
You most of the time you went out on a horse.
On a horse, yeah. And during dipping, that was in 29 to 31, I believe, tick eradication. There was a boy from Dixie County. He came here and rented the kitchen and dining room, I guess was all, wasn't it, from my dad-in-law. And he was a range rider. Well, I was a filly and a relief. And when anybody got anything too bad to handle, they sent for George Hunt and me.
Yeah.
And we would court the devil on it. And we'd leave from here and ride up to Payne's Prairie. And if somebody had a bad cow up there that couldn't pin or for dipping, why, we'd go get him one way or the other.
Yeah. How would you do it?
Sometimes we'd have to rope him and drag him in, and sometimes we'd let the dog catch him. And
yeah,
if we could get him in a bunch, well, we'd drive a bunch on the pin and cut him out.
Oh.
And I have got up here and rode from here to Pfeiffer and run wild horses over there and rode back that night.
Yeah.
I figured it's about, let's see, at least 14 or 15 miles over there.
Yeah.
Over there and back was 30 miles in a day.
Yeah.
And when you went over there and rode and run horses all day and got back home at night, you were ready to go to bed and go to sleep. My dad-in-law raised two little old mules out of a prairie mare, and they got up big enough to work. Well, I had plenty of horses, and he did too. Let one of my brother-in-laws have them to break, and he broke them, pretended up. He intended to buy them, but he didn't make anything, so he had to turn them back. And my dad-in-law got in touch with what car, J.C. Carter?
Ira Carter's father,
this lawyer judge in Gainesville, lived at Newberry, and he asked me one day to take him over there. 26 miles, the way we went through the hamlet, went out and got to Williston Cut Off, went to Williston, went from Williston up the Newberry Road. I had a little nigger to help me. And we carried those mules over and come back in a day. But when I got home that night, I was ready.
Well, you left home.
Daylight, yeah.
Daylight.
And it was after dark when I got back.
Yeah. Well, that's a long day.
It
starts, it's a lot of hours in that day.
That's right. And I had Sam Graddock was running cows up on the prairie, and he had a fellow working for him by the name of Stud Steel. He worked up there in Meat Market after he quit out there. And he told me one day, he says, I rode around Payne's Prairie in one day. And I said, Jerry, you didn't do it. He said, well, I'll change a little bit. He says, I rode around in one day and parked tonight. I said, it was a good park tonight, too. That's a long way to run, I'd say.
I met some people named Stud Steel. And I can see the old house and the old dirt road. And I remember it was hunting season. And these cars with hunters, full of hunters, was race up and down there.
Now let me see if I can get it straight. You come to what we call a New Walker Hootie. You know where Henry Chitty's place is?
Yes.
Well, I believe that Williston cuts off. In other words, there's a fork there.
Yeah.
And now, I don't think Stud still owned this place. Graddock probably owned it, but he lived out there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a pretty good cowpuncher.
Yeah.
They'd get a few of those wild horses up there and get us to come up there and ride them and try to break them or something.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it's being cold, and now there's been so much timber cut out today.
Yeah,
And, sure.
Yes, it was.
You've heard of Shorty Davidson, I know.
Yeah.
He used to be up there around High Spring, and then he got in with this car wreck down in the Silver Spring deal.
Yeah.
Well, he had owned a world of land back over in there. And we was over there one day hunting, and this boy was raised right down there pretty close to where you live now, Jimmy Welch, Mrs. Welch, and there's another boy.
Miss Sarah.
Sarah Welch.
Miss Sally.
Miss, yeah. And
Miss Sally Welch.
He was working over there for Davidson. We got to talking. He said, "Took." He says, "How much do you think this land is worth now, an acre?" I said, "I don't have any. It's old. Been a lot of phosphate mines back in there."
Yeah.
And I said, "I don't know." He says, "Well, a fella come out here years back and wanted to sell to Mr. Davidson." He told me, he says, "I don't want it." He says, "I got more land than I can ride over now." And he says, It ain't worth nothing but to hold the rest of the world together. Philip finally says, well, would you consider 25 cents an acre? Shorty says, yeah, I'll buy for that. That's to keep the world together. And you could go over there and ride for miles and miles, and you saw on Shorty Davidson's. He had some of it cleared, and he planted watermelon and everything. I had it done.
Yeah.
And these citron watermelon, I never saw it. They come up and grew wild, so to speak. And they just had worlds and worlds out.
Was they used for the stock?
No, I don't know if anything would eat them. Now, if you could bust, if a hog could bust one,
yeah,
he would probably eat the seed and maybe the meat, but that rind, it's tough.
Yeah. I used to see that them volunteering around in various places.
We, last time I saw very many of them was between Arch and Gainesville. This boy had a farm over there, Clarence Rowell. He is in with Hayes. It was in with Thomas and Hayes. I think they had that University City Dairy out this side on the edge of the prairie line. And he invited us over to shoot doves. And boy, he had them citrons great. Lord, they was just everywhere.
Oh.
And he would put a bunch of hogs in there. Now, it might be when they go and die and halfway rot, those hogs that eat those seed, I don't know. But, Lord, there was a many one over there.
He have, how did he protect his doves?
He had the fields enclosed.
Yeah.
He'd just invite so many hunters out there to shoot, and he'd shoot about twice a week. And they had, he'd plant his corn and turn his hogs in there and his cattle in there so much way. Then he picked quite a bit of it, and a corn picker shell and waste a lot of corn, you know. Those doves are just flocking.
Yes.
He had quite a bunch of quail over there, too.
Can doves, they can swallow one of them big grains of corn?
Yes. And I'll tell you something else I learned. It's been 3 years ago Robert Denton came out here. We don't plant corn or anything around here anymore except a little for eating, you know, and we used to plant fields there. But he come up here with his son and two more fellas and asked me if he can go back in there and shoot quail. You can go back in there and hunt. But I doubt if you find any. Anyway, they went on back and they came out and had seven, I believe. And he had one man that he said he could make a quail answer as far as he could hear him. And he was out there talking, and he heard one whistle down there, and he whistled back at him, and quail answered. Boy, took the dog and went down there and found him and killed him. But
this is the end of Channel 1 Right, the end of Channel 1 Right, the end of Channel 1 Right, the end of Channel 1 Right. Thursday, the 19th of March, 1970. Thursday, the 19th of March, 1970, the end of Channel 1 Right. The end of Channel 1 Right, Thursday, the 19th of March, 1970.